Brad, we're going to come to you. Question 12. Actually, question 12 is two questions. They seem to be related, so I'll ask them together. First, why does the building department have so much power? And what is your opinion about the International Building Code and the city's relationship with it and future regulations?
Again, we've got developers in the room, I can tell you that. Power of the engineering department. We just did a restructure just last week. And if you want to know what happened and how, you can talk to us later, talk to me later. But I think that as a council, we understand that there are codes to be followed. Now, I can't speak intelligently right off the bat of international code. I think I have a good understanding of state codes, but again, that's a whole nother, it's a volume this big. But we believe in our staff, and we know that they have discretionary decisions to be made. And as a city council member, I think I'm very cautious of their discretion, and that we ought to have a really good input on that discretion. We cannot define everything they say or do when it comes to building. We can follow codes, we can leave up to good judgment. But if that judgment is interfaced with personal feelings or whatever it might be, I think as a council, we will interject.
Agree wholeheartedly with Brad's comments there. We are going through a restructuring process right now. But I'll tell you this, I recently finished my basement and got to experience what all those international codes are, and man, it is crazy sometimes what they require of you to be able to do. But I can tell you this, they're probably there for a good reason. In the city, in the history, in the past, we haven't had good enforcement of our codes. And so someone moves into a home, and this happened in a councilman's neighborhood, not Brad or I's, but another councilman's neighborhood, was developed, and they put in a weaker pipe for the sewer laterals. And so everyone's front yard sunk a little bit when all those sewer laterals collapsed because they weren't using the right type of pipe. So I bet at that point in time, everyone's coming and saying, why didn't the city have stricter enforcement of their codes? So it's a balancing act. We got to make sure it's there to protect us. But as Brad said, they don't go over and beyond that. And that we got to make sure that when people have power and authority, they're using it right. And if not, we need to come in and make sure that we restructure that to make sure that it's being used appropriately.
I'm one of the developers in the room. Now, technically, it's just for one house. But I've experienced problems with the engineering department that I thought were specific to me, but as I've knocked on doors, I have met a lot of people who've had similar problems. I'm sorry I didn't know about the restructuring, because I could have pointed these people to it so they'd feel a little happier. We have one of the things I think it takes up the most time of the city council is zoning, taking care of building things. And so this is something that can be addressed, and I will look and see, because I've met a lot of people who've had problems. I've had good contractors, well known for doing a good job, having the best bids, who won't work in American Fort. I'm not the only one who's found that. This is something that we can take care of and address.
I wish I had more than a minute to discuss this one. I have two sons that are in construction. They've dealt with this city and many other cities. I've also had other experiences with other cities. American Fork is not out of line. But when it comes down to it, there are codes that everybody has to adhere to. And there are two ways to help people adhere to them. There's the right way and the wrong way, and many places in between. This oftentimes comes down to a people problem, in my opinion. The code is there. Developers often understand it, but they want to skirt it on some occasions. And I know of a couple of instances where that was done. It was done deliberately by the developers because of the way it was handled. So again, it's a people problem where things need to be worked out and worked together. But there are codes and there are reasons for that. Look at the homes that have slid down the hills.
Rob, question 13. Looking at the city budget, where do each of you see is the best place to cut the budget for savings in both the short term and, more importantly, for the long term?
had to bring all my homework with me today, so I apologize. I keep pointing at facts and figures, but I think it's important we get things right when we're talking about numbers. Employee expense is the biggest part of the budget, and it's a balancing act of making sure we reward those employees that are doing a really good job and being good stewards of the tax money. However, over the last 3 years, we were able to take where the city was paying 100% for insurance and back that down 10%. State auditor knows all about the state pension and the continual increases that they have. 30% of our employee cost goes to that state pension fund because of the lack of funding that goes there. So the current employees have to pay more and more and more. So one thing I've looked at more and more often to offload some of that cost is being to look at outsourcing. How can we be able to get the same level of service but not have to do it for 30% more because of the cost of the benefit package associated with city employees?
I hadn't realized the significance that our city employment carried in our budget. Now, we are required to work by what's called zero-based budgeting. What that means is, each year, everything comes in fresh. We can prioritize. The prioritization is the answer. And so, because we don't know all the things in there, we don't know what will be at the bottom and what will be at the top. But we know, because we can't spend more than we take in, we know that it just has to fit. It has to fit in there. I had several excited people tell me, we can find out now pretty closely how much city employees are paid. They pointed me to the utahsright.com where we can see what all the state employees are paid. We can see these things, but again, we don't know the exact answer because it deals with priorities and where they're set.
I want to address the website that Alan has referenced. I've had people tell me to go look at that site and look at how much city employees are paid. How much they're paid. They're talking about wages. One of the problems with looking at numbers again is knowing what the numbers represent. That website includes total compensation. Any of you that know anything about employee benefits and the cost of them, the cost of the retirement program is huge. Total compensation versus wages are two different things, and you have to know what you're looking at. Again, I agree with them. It's priority. We need to look at it. I admit I don't have the experience of having 4 years of working on the budget, so I don't know the detail the way that those two do. And I admire the fact that they do know and understand the detail, and I hope to be able to do the same thing.
As Rob is speaking, I'm writing down notes and they're exactly what he's saying. It's funny. So I think that subcontracting out, outsourcing anything that the city can that makes sense. And you can't do all everything, but there are some things, and we have leaned towards that, and we are continually to look for things to provide that savings and to just not increase the appetite of city government. If we can defer it off and still provide service, that's what we're looking to do. And so I think having that mindset, so that's specifically, we will continue to look for things. I can't say what's next, except that we have the mindset of that. Best practices, you know, technology comes around and sometimes technology can save you money, and so we're looking at best practices. One of those is that we actually invested and went in with a neighboring city to a paver. And so now we're able to pave roads, and we've done some up by the park, we've done by the cemetery, in-house, and we're saving money.
Okay, Alan, we're going to start with you. I believe this is our last question, and then we'll go into closing statements after that. So question 14, what will you get done about off-street parking during winter when snow flies? Specifically, snowplow drivers need a whole road to work with.
That's a good question, because not a lot can be done. If you've got snowplows coming through, they've kind of got authority. And that's not something that I've had to deal with, because I've always been out for work. I've always been able to park off the street, and my employer has cleared the snow by the time I get in there. On my street, I have parking. This isn't something I've had to deal with, so I can't answer that question until I look at it more closely. So give me a week. give me till Tuesday, and I'll have a really good answer for that.
And correct one.
I'm not sure I understood the question, and I apologize, but I think it deals with really people parking on the street in the winter when the snowplows need to go by. That's been a concern of mine for a long time. Our policemen have a lot to do. In my opinion, those cars need to be ticketed and they need to be hauled away. It's a pretty simple solution if they've been parked there for more than the night. The city law says, to some extent, you cannot park on the street overnight between November 1st and some other date. I'm not sure of the detail. We need to enforce that particular law. It's been an issue of mine for a long time. I didn't write the question. But I think if you're parking on the street in the winter, the snowplow ought to just push your stupid car off the road. And if you're in it, I'm okay with that, because maybe you'll learn. I'm kind of blunt sometimes.
That sounds like fun, actually. I think that this is one of many things. My father-in-law knows the city code. As a city, we send out prior to winter, we might even see it in November, a reminder to our residents to get off the roads. And so what he has done, he doesn't have room to do that, and so he carved a little piece off of his front lawn, and he plows it, and he actually just hops the curb and parks his truck there to comply. And, I think that's really good of him to do that. And so I don't think the city has been predatory to enforcing that code. That's a real delicate line between a heavy hand and just asking people to comply with the for their own safety. And so I would say that in most cases, I think, do I see it? Am I going to stop as a council member and say, hey, get your car off? I see the violation, just like I see people maybe watering. So I think specific, if there's a real issue, please get with us. We'll get it enforced, and we'll invite our enforcement officer to follow through.
Regular council meeting, every time a development comes up, and John can talk about this as chairman of our planning commission, developers want less parking that they have to provide, which pushes more on-street parking. So we as a council have to make sure, as we're looking at new developments, to make sure that happens. My parents' home was built back in the 40s. Guess how many off-street parkings was provided at that point in time? One. How many of us have a single car anymore? So I think I love our police chief, because he takes a look and says, how do we educate? It's not just about enforcement. How do we educate and actually change behavior? Just to give an example, during December last year, they handed out 78 candy canes instead of tickets. How would that work? Just get pulled over, kind reminder, slow down, here's a candy cane. Father's Day, they did something very, very similar. So I like that approach. What they're doing right now with the snowplow issue is putting notes on windshields, trying to remind people. Again, as Brad said, if you have a significant problem in your neighborhood, please let us know about it. We'll make sure an enforcement officer is over there to first educate, then enforce.
Okay, we're going to go to closing comments. We're going to start with Kevin, then Alan, then Rob, then Brad.
3 minutes?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
We'll set the timer. You have 2 minutes for closing.
Ready?
Okay, Kevin.
Ready. Set, go.
Again, thanks for coming. I tend to have a little fun at these. Sometimes they get a little tense, so I appreciate you laughing at some of my stupid jokes and stuff. That's going to be a problem if I get elected to city council, because sometimes there's this word called decorum, and you have to have decorum. And I've been accused of not being that way at times. But I think we should enjoy what we're doing and have fun at it. I think when you evaluate who you want to serve you in city council, I think you need to look at the person. What's the experience of that person? What's the personality of the person? What are the strengths of that person? How does that person feel on some key issues? But don't vote on one key issue, because this job is much bigger than one key issue. I think you need to have trust in the people that you elect, and that they need to be serving for the proper reason. I would appreciate the chance again to serve. That's why I'm running, to serve the people. We've talked a lot about roads, we've talked a lot about numbers, we've talked a lot about these things, about a lot of different things. When it comes down to it, to me, the most important thing is people. Can your city council member work with people? Can people approach him or her? Can people explain their points of view and feel comfortable that the city council member understands and wants to work at it? So first and foremost to me, it's about people, not about things.
You're next.
Okay. We all know the main concerns here. We have the roads, we have the water, concern about our city debt and our taxes. We can have lower taxes. We have the room. We have the room. And I'm not just talking, and I'm not just here, even though it's what motivated me, for people on fixed incomes. I'm here, it has to be looked at not just as fiscal conservatism, but from the taxpayer. This is the taxpayer's money. And sometimes that's kind of a hard thing to remember when you're dealing with priorities and all those things. You don't think, sometimes it's just hard to remember. The whole thing is about priorities. It's kind of exciting working on a city level. There are temptations. We have big utilities, but big services who've accumulated nearly $1 billion in debt. There are things with management, and these are not things we have, but these are things that we have checks and balances. Managers in these businesses who are paid far above what comparable businesses pay. But we have checks and balances. The city council is here to stand for those things. And you can tell by what I say and you can see by my passion. You know what I believe, and you know I do not stop. This is my energy.
You heard me talk at the beginning about a soccer coach that I had, and the quote she had given us, which was, anyone can make an excuse, but not everyone can make an effort. I hope that you go to the ballot box this coming week. You can take a look at that. And I'm pretty proud of the track record we've been able to accomplish. And I can't say that's all on me, because you have to have great people to work with, like Brad and the current council, and I'm grateful for the mayor for his working relationship. Well, we have differences of opinion, but we can come together and find a way to move forward for the common good. Again, what other city in town and in our county can be able to come back and show $1.8 million in budget cuts that they've been able to make and reallocate that money? A lot of people have talked about how we haven't done anything to lower taxes or rates, but we have. Again, 18% on your property tax, on your effective tax rate, over the last 3 years has gone down. I understand that some services have to go up because we're underfunding them. And the reason for that is, quite frankly, because past councils would rob Peter to pay Paul. They'd see a surplus being built up there to be used to spend something, and they'd say, oh, we can use it over here. And now we're saying, no, we should get back to surplusing that, and it's just crazy accounting, to be quite frank with you. I'll use my background in finance to the best ability that I can to making sure that you get the best bang for every dollar that you pay into the city. It's a commitment I have. The final 30 seconds that I have, the best thing that I could do is say thank you to you. It's been an awesome privilege to be able to serve over the last 4 years. And the greatest thing that I have come away with is the relationships I've been able to build. There are people in this town that I never would have met had I not been on the council, who have come to me very concerned and frustrated, and to be able to walk away as friends and be able to find a solution is phenomenal. Being able to serve with people such as Brad and the mayor and the current council and build those strong relationships of unity as you're working together is a relationship that will last an eternity. And I really appreciate the trust you've put in me, and I hope I can continue that for the next 4 years. Thank you.
You know, I could choose to live anywhere in the United States, or I guess the world for a minute, but I choose to live in American Fork. And so I love my town, and I have a sheer desire to serve and to do the right thing in my service. I know that my service in the council now, and I hope to continue, will be viewed through the lens of not just today, but will be viewed through the lens of decades, perhaps, and the decisions we make will be, you know, things that will be viewed, the financial decisions, the infrastructure, whatever it might be. And so I have a sheer desire to do what is right. And I tell you, I think the city has a head, And if we could talk about it for a long time, it could tell you what it is, but that's usually where I think of the finances. And that's very important what we do. And I lean on my own experiences, my council members that serve with me that I know are better at it than me. But I'll listen to them and I'll learn. And then there's other things that I do well, and I appreciate when they listen to me. But we have developed good relationships with our neighboring cities, our county, and Matlan Association of Government, who helps fund certain issues. And so those are strategic relationships that I think I would like to continue. And so I said about the head. Now here, let me tell you about the heart. The heart of the city is Steel Days, okay? The heart might be memorializing a fallen police officer that was in our city that lived here. It could be a flag that's going up in our cemetery. It can be all of those things. And so I think those things are very important to me as well. And I've taken a kind of a special issue to try to bring out heart issues. One element that's very important to me is the canyon. I think that's another one of those heart issues that's very important. And as collectively, as a council and as the mayor, we let out on that issue, and it's not over, and we'll continue to use what authority we have, but I have to ask for your vote. This is something that has been, so please vote for me, and I'll do my best.
Thank you for coming out this morning. First, I want to thank American Fork Hospital for the delicious breakfast. If we can have a round of applause for that. Next, thank you for the American Fork Chamber of Commerce for hosting this event and coordinating all the schedules. Also, I know a little bit what it's like to be a candidate, to put yourself out there, to share your ideas, to share your opinions. It's a difficult thing. So let's have another round of applause for our candidate. Now you have three open seats and you have an election in about a week and a half. And I count about 40 folks here. So there's a lot of your friends and neighbors that you need to get out and help educate and inform and inform them about who you think are the best candidates to represent the future of American Fork. And finally, we answered about two-thirds of the questions. So I know there's more questions, so I think we're gonna mix and mingle a little bit afterwards so you can ask the candidates your question. But I also wanna personally thank you. I've been coming down to American Fork for 12 years helping host debates for you with your candidates. It's a privilege to serve you. And I guess it's also a privilege to be able to spend my tax dollars down here as well. But thank you so much for coming today. Yeah.